This year, Dell Technologies wants to help you do amazing things with their best tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Plus, curate your dream setup with great deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at dell.com/deals, you'll have access to leading-edge technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Again, that's dell.com/deals.
This introducing is the Rich Eisen Show.
I try to give you facts.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Does the combine still matter?
Combine still matters. It will always matter. It never won't matter. I take it that the coaches aren't showing up. It's because the broadcast is so damn good.
You know what? Go run another 40 in your suit.
Oh, I plan to.
Earlier on the show, legendary Hollywood producer Brian Grazer. Still to come. Senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer. Falcons head coach, Raheem Morris. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Yeah. That's correct. Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. What a great first hour. The legendary producer, Brian Grazer, was here. We talked about so many of his movies, from Night Shift to Splash to Friday Night Lights, Apollo 13. So much to talk about with him. We could barely scratch the surface, but obviously we talked about the documentary that he's the executive producer on, The Dynasty, New England Patriots. A great chat with Tom Curran yesterday about the current decision the Patriots are going to have starting this very spring with the third overall pick. I'm heading to the Combine after today's show. Albert Breer will join us from the Combine coming up in 20 minutes' time to talk about what he's writing about, talk about what everyone's talking about at the Combine, which is pretty much everything. Raheem Morris, the Atlanta Falcons' new head coach, will join us in hour number three of this show. Something that Albert wrote about in the MMQB caught my eye.
What do you got?
He says that an unnamed executive says that J.J. McCarthy is, quote-unquote, way off from the top three quarterbacks in this year's draft. And talking about how they're surprised by his size.
Yeah.
He's lanky.
I've heard a little bit about that. Doesn't weigh very much.
One veteran exec told me in the fall that he was taken aback by how narrow and lanky the Wolverines quarterback was, calling him a stretched out Bryce Young, Breer wrote.
Whoa.
Okay. I just want to say this. It's unfair what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Have you ever heard about a quarterback coming into the league off of a stellar season, not a championship season, but a stellar season for his school? And he got drafted all the way in the sixth round because everybody thought he couldn't do it.
You're right. That's not fair what you're doing.
I know. I know. But you compare players just because of the school that they go to. You know. I don't care how lanky he was. There wasn't a single time I was sitting there watching that team over the last 2 years talking about how stretched out and lanky he is. And I understand the pros are totally different than college. But I would just tell anybody out there that you pass on this guy at your peril. The Denver Broncos are meeting with him tonight, according to George Payton, the general manager of the Broncos. Wise move. Wise move. I think that would be an outstanding fit. Will he drop to 12? Should the Broncos trade up to go get him? When you meet him, and we've only met over Zoom, I look forward to shaking his hand. I might linger in the handshake. Heads up. Might be one of those awkward ones. He'll attempt to let go first, I'm sure. But I've communicated with him for 2 years, and you pass at your peril. And when you meet him, you get impressed. That's it. And it sure looks like the Broncos are in the market for a new quarterback. And we'll get to that in hour number three, because Sean Payton spoke today.
Also, there's 6 months before next season. He could easily put on 15 pounds.
The lankiness,
and,
exactly.
And suddenly, I mean, he's again, the, 215, 220.
The dynasty.
Whatever.
The dynasty documentary. I'd never seen the moving pictures of Brady at the combine.
With the shirt off.
You've only seen the shirt off
right.
photographs. It's film. They got the footage of that. And him running at the combine, and him running the three cones, looking like what they say is a baby deer with his limbs flying all over the place.
Just born, and I can't really walk.
But Brady had the size. Brady's never had his size question.
Yeah, Brady's a big guy, 6'5". Yeah, big guy.
Never had the size question. So,
but we do realize that going to the same college does not guarantee you.
Oh no,
success,
no, no,
right?
No, but I'm just saying no. I'm saying that Michigan is not known as a quarterback school.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah,
even with Tom Brady having 7 rings, because Brady there had to deal with Drew Henson, which is another part about this documentary. It's just like what Brady had to overcome to get the opportunity to become the Tom Brady that we all know is truly an unbelievable journey.
But you didn't think of him as a great quarterback until that 2007 season.
You didn't think of him as a great quarterback until 2007, even after he won 3 out of 4?
I would say New England fans were like, this is the guy. But I think nationally it was just kind of like, oh, he's got a great defense. He doesn't really throw a lot. He's never had more than like 20 touchdowns. Like, he's kind of getting carried by Brewski and McGinnis and Will Fort.
And I guess as evidenced by the fact that
Bill
Deion Branch got the MVP in that Super Bowl, not the guy who threw it to him. In the same way that Ben didn't get it, Santonio Holmes got it, because there was a lack of respect for Ben, although for different reasons.
Then 2007 hits, and it's just, I mean, they scored 38 points the first 3 games of the season. You're like, what is this team?
50 touchdowns.
And now you're like, oh, he's one of the greatest now.
Because also, Chris, it took a long time for the majority of the people to put him above Peyton. Peyton held on to that quote-unquote number one guy spot for without winning for a long period. So I don't know if it was people just didn't want to give it to Brady.
I'm just telling you, the kid is the national championship quarterback for a reason. It's not because of, obviously the team was great, defensively great, offensive line great, running game is what got him through Penn State. I think he was hurt in that game. I'll just say you're overlooking him at your peril and just leave it at that for the moment.
The Broncos might be able to stay at 12 and get him. They may not have to move up if what Albert's saying is what he's hearing is true about the gap.
We're talking an hour about 13 minutes time. The NBA, as we all know, has an officiating issue, right? But
long time.
I understand that. But from my point of view, they have a replay issue. They're having trouble finding the right chord between using replay appropriately and trying to ignore the fact that replay exists for it, on the altar of gameplay and game flow. Because you could stop an NBA game in every possession to take a look at whether there was a foul or not. So I understand that they don't want to turn, as you see sometimes college basketball will stop, but last 2 minutes of a college basketball game can sometimes take a half an hour because of timeouts and television timeout. You got to take a commercial break, you come back, and then replay butts its head in ways that it shouldn't, and it breaks up the game flow, and the NBA doesn't want that, and I understand why they don't. But the NBA has an issue with blowing a call in the last minute of a game and then admitting they blew the call within minutes of the game being over and trying to be as transparent as possible in their 2-minute report where they come out each game, has the last 2 minutes reviewed by the league and whether this should have been a violation, this should have been a foul, and things of that nature. Last night, the Knicks beat the Pistons in Madison Square Garden in a tight game. And the Knicks did not deserve to get the lead at the end because Dante DiVincenzo committed a loose ball foul after turning the ball over in a tie game on the final possession that was allowed to continue instead of no whistle, and the ball wound up in the hands of Josh Hart for an and one. And the Knicks beat the Pistons. And after the game, Monty Williams, who is one of the more reserved coaches in the NBA, just decided to put the fine money on the table. At some point, I think there will be an NBA head coach that will just have $25,000 in cash or an actual check written out. Like, if I'm an NBA head coach, do you have like a one of those big poster size checks that you see given out?
Lottery winner?
Yes.
Yeah.
You see given out at like ribbon cuttings.
Gilmore.
You know what I mean?
What about it?
Like, it's already there. You have it in the locker room written out to the NBA in the amount of $25,000, the maximum you can be fined, and just have it on an easel behind you while you deliver the speech that Monty Williams delivered last night.
The absolute worst call of the season. No call. And enough's enough. We've done it the right way. We've called the league. We've sent in clips. We're sick of hearing the same stuff over and over again. We had a chance to win the game, and the guy dove into Asar's legs, and there was a no call. That's an abomination. You cannot miss that in an NBA game, period. And I'm tired of talking about it. I'm tired of our guys asking me, what more can we do, coach? That situation is exhibit A to what we've been dealing with all season long, and enough's enough. You cannot dive into a guy's legs in a big-time game like that and there be a no call. It's ridiculous, and we're tired of it. We just want a fair game called, period. And I got nothing else to say. We want a fair game, and that was not fair. I'm done.
Now he goes.
Wow.
The one line that we didn't, because I guess it was off mic that we didn't clip for you as well, was he started saying, where's the New York media now?
Yeah, I heard that.
That's what he said before he delivered that soliloquy, because I imagine the New York media did not show up to the post-game Pistons press conference. James Williams, the crew chief, not the assistant crew chief, crew chief.
From the top guy.
Well, it's also a Hollywood Shuffle reference.
Oh, yeah.
It's a Winky Dinky Dog reference.
I forgot.
Every single time I hear crew chief, I think of...
You work hard, Robert. One day, maybe you might become crew chief.
Crew chief. Assistant crew chief. Anyway, James Williams, the official, is the crew chief. He was the one standing over the play, right next to it. Like when Dante DiVincenzo tried to recover the turnover he had just created. I mean, Asar Thompson stepped into the lane, picked off the pass, then kind of lost control of it trying to dribble it, but did get a hand on it when DiVincenzo barreled into him. And the contact nearly knocked James Williams over. No call. Play continues. Of course, it winds up down low and one. Knicks wind up winning the game because there was hardly any time left. After the game, he goes, this is in a pool report. Upon post-game review, we determined that Thompson gets to the ball first and then was deprived of the opportunity to gain possession of the ball. Therefore, a loose ball foul should have been whistled on New York's Dante DiVincenzo. And if this is reviewable post-game, can't we come up with a construct to review it in-game? And I understand the replay rules are constructed in such a way, it's so stingy that coaches just won't use it on obvious situations in a first half. It doesn't matter. The only way they would use it, a replay challenge in the first half is if it's to review a foul on one of your key players that just picked up his third, you know, in the second quarter. It doesn't matter. They will just, reviews will not be used by a head coach in the NBA until the last couple months. You keep it in your back pocket. because they're so stingy. The league's so stingy with these reviews. And then if you don't have one, you have to sometimes wonder, is this even reviewable? Can you even review whether a loose ball foul should be called? The association has got to get their governors together in their competition committee. By the way, I should have a seat on every league's competition committee because I've got an opinion on everything. And certainly I feel like I'm an expert on replay based on the NFL. But the NFL doesn't, you know, can stop the game in the final 2 minutes and it doesn't seem to affect the flow. In the NBA, they just don't want it stopped. They don't want the game to end. They don't want an extra timeout to be given to another team. You know, because you're calling timeout, you're giving another team a chance to draw up a play or whatever. I understand there these two sports are different, but you got to figure out a way. Do you have the say the last 60 seconds of the game is reviewed by the league office? All reviews come in from the league office in the last 2 minutes of a game. Do you come up with what would be termed egregious? I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out here. But it's infuriating as a fan to say, oh, so you had time that you knew at the time this thing was potentially so blown that you'd looked at it afterwards, or the two-minute review is conducted by the officials right away, every game, doesn't matter whether there is something egregious or game turning or stomach turning, they do this process and then they speak to a pool reporter. But for me, it's infuriating. Like, yeah, we've already looked at it and already know we blew it, or at least we're telling you. Well, why don't we then come up with a construct where we do it when it can actually be overturned and rectified and the game isn't affected? Why can't we come up with that?
That would be too easy.
Well, again, it's not. I'm trying to point out how it's not easy where they don't want to interrupt the game flow. Again, college basketball, sometimes it's infuriating how long it takes.
Last night, it was so obvious.
Right.
You know, get it right.
The guy turns it over. He makes a terrible pass that is easily intercepted by the defense. It's just that he has a split moment trying to corral it after he picks it off. So the ball is loose, but he does get to it first. It's so obvious that the guy who created the turnover is barreling in his way to try to rectify his mistake.
Right.
And clearly fouls.
And the ref is standing
right there.
Right there.
And he's the crew chief, who's just mere moments away from reviewing it and telling a pool reporter, I blew it. But we don't have a construct in order to have that moment happen when it can actually be properly rectified. Now, if you're the league, do you replay the last some odd seconds of the game? Why don't you get everyone out there?
That seems pretty
easy. You've already said it's blown.
And I'm not the only fan who thinks this. Your immediate thought is, what was the spread?
Oh,
what was the total?
Well, I don't think that
What's
way.
What's going on here? A lot of fans think that way.
That's unfortunate.
But that's the NBA's own fault.
Because their own official years ago did this.
And they did nothing to put the public's mind at ease.
Well, then maybe the way to put the public's mind at ease is to come up with a replay construct to fix it. I guess I should use a different word, to rectify it.
Better than what it is now.
Well, because you think it's fixed.
Well, look.
I'm saying fix it, and you're saying maybe it's fixed.
The total's 225, and it ended at 224 because of the N1.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. What are we doing? I don't think that's a coincidence.
You really think people think?
I think it happens way too often
for
it to just be like, oh, that's weird.
Let's take a break. Albert Breer will be joining us from the Combine next. This is the edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Let's take a break before Albert Breer.
A America starts the day with America in the Morning. Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather. Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
In New York, I'm Sue Aller.
I'm Charles Tillotesma.
Sagar Meghani, Washington.
I'm Jennifer King.
I'm Clayton Neville.
I'm Kevin Carr.
I'm Archie Zaraletta.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
On the Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast, co-host David Green and Rob Abasolo interview real estate investors and entrepreneurs about successes, failures, and hard-earned lessons. Joined by author Dave Meyer.
Who wrote a book?
I did write a book.
It seems like you're coming out with a book every 4 minutes.
You are one to talk. You've released 2 books this year. I've done half as many as you.
It is more about strategy than it is about just finding whatever the new buzzword happens to be.
Bigger Pockets Real Estate Podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen.
You know what? We're givers here on the Rich Eisen Show. Yeah. We're not just takers.
I think so.
So let's bring in Albert Breer before the radio audience joins, just to so we could give something to Albert, if you don't mind. Can we get Albert up here? There you are, Albert. You're there, Albert. You give us so much.
I'm being set up.
No, you're
I
not
think.
Being set up. Albert, not the way you think. Don't worry about it. You give us so much, Albert. We're going to give something to you. Okay, it's a scoop. I think you need to run this down. Use all of your outstanding reporting acumen to run this down. Put it up on the screen here. Kyler Murray is the franchise quarterback of the Arizona Cardinals, okay?
Okay.
Albert, so that's your news. That's what they tweeted out yesterday.
There it is. Just like 4 years ago, right?
I guess.
5 years ago? Yeah.
There you go.
Josh is our guy, I think was the quote,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I don't know. What is something going on with them? Like we're... They feel a need to tweet that out, or what do you?
It is a little weird, but I mean, like every indication I've gotten is that they're good, and like that Kyler, you know, like really meshed well with Jonathan Gannon and with Drew Petzing, the offensive coordinator. So I wonder if they're trolling us a little bit, because you'll remember. So there was that, right? And then I think it was 2 years ago where Eric Burkhart, Kyler's agent, on the first day of the combine, dropped that statement, right?
Oh, that's right.
If you remember. So, like, this has sort of been a Cardinals thing over the last 5 years. Okay. So, are they trolling us? I don't know. Well, it feels like they're trolling us.
Oh, that's, you know? I'm glad that it's in support, because then the spirit of our collage that we put out, there it is. Mike Del Tufo is our franchise audio executive. There he is.
Oh, I like it. Okay. I like it. See, Mike, does that affirmation make you feel good?
Yeah.
I don't know how to feel. I really don't.
Back on the Rich Eisen Show.
Well, maybe I'm actually interviewing for the job right now.
No.
Right
in front of you. No, Albert. This is our audio executive, and you just stay in your lane. You're outstanding in your lane where you are. Uh-huh. But I just want to make sure that everyone understands that these collages are all in support. They're not all to leave the door open for people. You know what I'm saying?
I also wanted to mention, I really appreciated your response to my Marvin Harrison tweet yesterday. And
you
I was going to respond, but I was in the air.
Okay.
Right. And then I wound up finding a piece of video where you guys were actually workshopping it.
Yes.
So I was wondering if, Rich, you'd be so kind, maybe you could give me your staff.
Yes.
To workshop. Before
I hand off the staff to you, let me recap the story that you put out there, is that Marvin Harrison is not working out specifically for combine. No, so many of the kids these days are just training to run fast or jump high at the combine. He's not going to do the workouts at the combine or the pro day. He's getting ready for football this fall. And you said, I think that's a smart decision. I then responded by saying, perhaps something along the lines of it might help that he didn't play in December or January either, you know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you guys helped me workshop that. There it is. Maybe it will help that he had December and January off too, is what I said. There it is. There's the exchange. Right. Now I hand it to you, Albert. My staff is yours.
What do you got?
Yeah, so I had a couple of different ideas here. One was a Michigan man would know what that feels like. Another one I was thinking was the only shame of all of this is that he won't be around next November for the reckoning. But that might be a little too direct, and I don't know. I want to keep this a little light and not be as direct and hit you between the eyes with it.
But
so.
You can't. I'm untouchable. I'm untouchable.
But that's the thing. Yeah,
right
and that's
now.
The thing is. That's
there's
the thing
no
is.
Return.
Like, and I don't. And I.
You're
and
there's
no.
That's the beautiful yeah. thing.
I think Albert just. I just mean, use facts. Use the facts to your advantage in the two games against Michigan.
He had his day.
He had 12 catches for 238 yards and two touchdowns. I think that gets right. the point across.
Right, and that's when he was playing a defense that he said he hadn't really seen before, and he still succeeded.
Right. It was too. It was too easy for him. That's why he said that.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, did they help, Albert?
You mean like, so, yeah, I mean, I think it probably helped him get better for the NFL and help all those guys get.
No, did these guys help you?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say it also helped some coaches get NFL jobs.
By the way, that's like one of those things that you give your customers, like, hey, was my staff helpful today?
I will say this. You were very patient, and you waited a lot of years, and now you've pounced, and I can't blame you, and I have to take my medicine, and that's where we're at right now, and at least for another, I'm doing the math in my head right now. You know, I went to Ohio State, so I have to kind of take my time doing this. Another 9 months, right? And we'll see what happens.
Very good. Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show from the Combine. Your take on Ryan Poles' comments today is what, based on your reporting that you said the Bears wanted to have a plan coming out of the combine about what they're going to do at quarterback. So you're the perfect person to ask about Poles' comments today and how you read them.
So I think Poles' comments reflect a general manager who wants all of his options laid out before him. And I don't think it behooves him to publicly say what they're going to do. In other words, if they say we're trading Justin Fields, well, now how do other teams look at that, right? Do offers for the first overall pick stop coming in? If he says, you know, we're trading the first overall pick, well, then, you know, like, how does that affect that market? So I think what's best for him and what's best for the franchise right now is to have all of their options out in front of them with the knowledge in the back of their heads of what they're going to do. Now, they have done a ton of work on Caleb Williams, and they are far down the line. Now, they have to meet with him this week, but, I mean, they were in Los Angeles. When they went out, they met with Cliff Kingsbury about their offensive coordinator job. They were out there to talk to Zach Robinson. They did a background through the fall. I mean, they have an idea of what they think of Caleb Williams, and I think this week is about confirming it. But I still think the likelihood is that they stick at one and take him because look, like he's a generational talent. Like he's a once every few years type of quarterback, and it gives them a chance to reset, the rookie contract clock for your quarterback, which is invaluable. So like, I think this week's going to be about, again, like he said, information gathering and gathering what they could get for the number one overall pick. And gathering what is possible for Justin Fields. And they've allowed a lot of that to happen to this point, naturally, having teams come to them rather than the other way around. But, I mean, Ryan said it himself. Like, if we're trading Justin Fields, the fair thing to do is to trade him before free agency starts. It's what's fair for Justin. It's also what's best for them because there are going to be far fewer quarterback vacancies 4, 5, 6 weeks from now. So, you know, with free agency just a couple of weeks away, I don't think there's any question that Justin has that Ryan Poles has it in his head. Like, this is probably what we're going to do pending the last piece of the information gathering that we do this week.
What's your best guess as to what the markets are for the first overall pick and for Justin Fields?
Well, the first overall pick, it sort of depends on how far down you're coming from, right? Like, so, you know, Minnesota at 11 or Denver at 12, we're going to have to pay more pick wise than Washington would for flip-flopping their 1 and 2. But I mean, this is seen as a very rich quarterback draft and a quarterback draft that's very strong at the top. So I think the teams that have the top three picks are all going to have strong markets for their picks. And I think there is a separation between Caleb Williams and Drake May and Jaden Daniels. So if the Bears were to auction the pick off, I think they could get a lot for it. I think more than three first round picks, if you're talking about going outside the top 10 to 11 or 12, I think it'd be that sort of haul for him. Justin Fields, I think, because of the contractual situation, and again, none of this is Justin's fault. It's a weird circumstance where they had somebody else's first-round pick, and that team wound up being the worst team in the league. So it's not like he was the quarterback of the worst team in the league, and that's what put them in this situation. And they love him. They think he can win with him. You know, but I think that they, again, they want to do right by Justin. I mean, this is a GM in Ryan Poles who took Justin into the draft room, took him into the war room 2 years ago when he first got there, and basically showed him the draft board and explained, this is why we probably aren't taking a receiver in the round, right? So, like, he's going to be transparent the same way with Justin this time around. I think he's going to try to get him to the best place possible for Justin as well as for the Bears. And I think we're probably talking, and most ballpark I've got, no, people don't think they're going to be able to get a one for him, but a day two pick plus a day three pick, which is affected, of course, by his contractual situation that he's only got 1 year left on his rookie deal, that the fifth year option is really expensive if you decide to pick that up. You know, like, so I think we're talking, again, a day two pick and a day three pick, whether that's a 2 and a 5 or a 3 and a 7, whatever it is, I think depends on how many teams wind up being in it. But I think it's somewhere in that ballpark.
Who's in it for Fields? You're hearing Pittsburgh and Atlanta, and you're hearing Raiders, you know, all the usual suspects.
Atlanta's the one I have circled. Like, I've heard that the owner really liked him 3 years ago. And I think, you know, I think if you're Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot, what going and getting Justin Fields does for you with a roster that's already pretty built out is he gives you a swing at getting your quarterback for the next 5 or 10 years, but not the sort of swing as if you took one 5th overall or 7th overall or 9th overall, right? In other words, they could trade for Justin Fields and still take a quarterback this year in the first round or next year or the year after. He gives you a shot at having a long-term answer at quarterback, but you're also not like handcuffed. So you can still take more shots at it as you go. So I think that's why for Atlanta, he makes sense. Now, Pittsburgh, I think, is possible. Mike Tomlin's got a lot of strong connections to the Ohio State program. They're going to be able to get good information on him. Arthur Smith did pass on him 3 years ago, though, right? Like, so Arthur Smith's offense can work for him. What does he think of him? Vegas would be another one. But Luke Getsy's there. So what does Luke Getsy think after working with him the last couple of years? Does he want to build an offense in Vegas the same way that he built one for him in Chicago? I think those would be the teams I'd start with. And, you know, again, like, you go down the list of teams that have franchise quarterbacks or that took quarterbacks high the last couple of years, you get to a point where it's like, you know, no more than a handful of teams probably get involved in this.
Well, I mean, if say you're a team like Washington or New England, you know, no one's really even mentioning Washington as a Justin Fields location because everybody thinks they're just going to go and get the kid they want in the draft, not named Caleb Williams. But you could get Justin Fields now for, as you pointed out, a day two pick or two, and add Marvin Harrison Jr. to the mix using that choice. Right. You could stay put, and then you get the best receiver that a lot of people think have come out of the draft in quite some time for Justin Fields, right? I mean, like, that's the benefit of going to get Justin Fields now. That's how you could work it.
And I think it would work for Washington more than it would for New England, just because I think Washington's roster is a little bit more built out.
Right.
New England has so many needs, right? Like, if you look at, and they've got needs at premium positions, Rich, like tackle, receiver, quarterback. Like, it really is sort of a ground up rebuild. Whereas, like, Washington, you can start to look around their roster. And yes, they traded the defensive ends, but they had Daron Payne and Jonathan Allen. They drafted Emmanuel Forbes last year. At receiver, they've got Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson. So Washington, I could see it a little bit more because you can get yourself to a place where you're like, okay, you know, I could see where it would make sense for them because then maybe they're a little bit closer, and adding a Marvin Harrison could put them over the top. The one thing about that is, though, San Francisco wasn't wild about Fields 3 years ago. And the new general manager there, the guy who's going to be making this pick, came from San Francisco. So I still think the likelihood would be the Commanders take either Daniels or May at 2.
Albert Breer here on the Rich Eisen Show. What is going on with the Broncos and Russell Wilson? And I'll just leave it at that.
I think it's over. Don't you?
yeah, it sounds over, you know, with Sean Payton also saying today that he said he saw a meme of somebody wearing a jersey of a bunch of names of the quarterbacks with crossed out names. He says, we just got to make sure the next one isn't crossed out.
Right.
And thus, you know, the next one clearly doesn't refer to Russell Wilson, who goes on the I Am Athlete podcast and, you know, tells Brandon Marshall essentially that the team did him dirty, but he still wants to stay and his house isn't sold. So that's why I ask you, like, what is going on with Russ?
Somebody, but like, sometimes I feel like everyone needs a fresh start. Doesn't this feel like one of those situations?
Well, Rich? But the Denver Broncos were supposed to be the fresh start for
him. And it's been 2 years, and now you have the history of the Nathaniel Hackett year. You have the history of how last year ended. You have the fight between the agent and the team that happened at the end of last year. There's just all of this baggage that Russell Wilson would carry into 2024, right? So if Russell Wilson goes, let's say Russell Wilson goes to Las Vegas, right, and plays for the Raiders. Well, if the Raiders start like 2-3 and he's got a few picks over the first 5 weeks, okay, good. You ride it out, right? That same scenario happens in Denver, and oh my God, are they looking to run him out of town, you know, because he's still chasing all of that history of the last couple of years. And things could go sour quicker because of the history there, right? So I think, you know, a fresh start makes the most sense for everybody. It makes sense for Russell. I think it really makes sense for Sean Payton. I think this right here is the opportunity for Sean Payton to hit reset at quarterback and go forward and execute his own quarterback plan, which I think in the back of his head, he really wanted to do from the time he got to Denver at the beginning of 2023. And so I think the Broncos are going to be doing all of the work with the quarterbacks in the draft. I look at J.J. McCarthy and Bo Nix as guys who stylistically actually make some sense, right? So could those guys be a consideration with the 12th overall pick? I think they'll talk to teams about trading up. Now, whether or not they can pull it off, I don't know. But I think that you're going to see a reset here. And I think the reset's going to happen because Russell Wilson could use a fresh start. There's the contractual issue that you'd have to work around to make it to even think about having him back. And this is maybe the one shot that Sean Payton has in Denver at hitting the reset button. I can't see him passing that up.
I don't know, though. I mean, I read somewhere that J.J. McCarthy's lanky and is way back of the quarterback group. Albert, where did I read that? Oh, that's right. An unnamed executive.
Oh, you think No.
I'm not saying you. No, I'm saying somebody that you're quoting is misreading.
But
the
had
situation.
The other one too. If you look, there's another quote.
No, I'm not saying you're doing him dirty. I didn't mean that. No, I'm just saying somebody's doing him dirty. You know.
No, there's split. There's a huge amount of split opinion on J.J. McCarthy. What I've found, at least.
Yeah.
Like I think. So there's a couple problems. Number one, it's can he carry a team? Because he wasn't asked to at Michigan. Now, that doesn't mean he can't, but you're projecting that a little bit. And if you go back and you look at the history of it, right, with some of the young guys in the league now, Josh Allen carried Wyoming. Patrick Mahomes carried Texas Tech. Lamar Jackson carried Louisville. Joe Burrow didn't have to carry LSU, but with an all-star team around him, he broke every record, not just at LSU, but every record in the SEC, mm-hmm. right? So you haven't seen that. There's also the question about his build. And, you know, like, how much weight can he put on? How tall is he? I think it's going to be big for him this week to get in front of these guys. So these guys can kind of eye him up and see, okay, can he put on more weight? How big can we project him to get? So those are all questions. What I would say, and I say this like 100% genuine, like this has nothing to do with our rivalry.
Of course.
He is competitive as hell. His makeup is great. He's a winner. Like he's got a loose wrist, he's got a good arm, he's a really good athlete, and he's a loose athlete. I mean, there's a lot to like there. It's can you wrap your head around the idea that he's lighter than you'd like, he may be a little shorter than you'd like, and he hasn't been asked to carry a team at the college level. That's what you have to reckon with.
Before I let you go, I'm going to ask you this question in a sports talk radio way. You can only choose one. Kirk Cousins is back with Minnesota. Justin Jefferson is back with Minnesota. They're both back with Minnesota. Neither's back with Minnesota. How do you see that?
Justin Jefferson is back with Minnesota. I could just tell you what the head coach, Kevin O'Connell, and the GM, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, think of him. They believe he is one of one, that there is not another receiver like him. He's still only 24, so whoever their long-term quarterback is can benefit from him. He's got 7 or 8 years maybe left in his prime. I think it's going to be tough to get a deal done because the cap going up means the numbers are going to go up, right? So are you talking about paying him what, say, Nick Bosa got for the Niners? And we're talking about getting like well into the 30s now. That's something that the Vikings are going to have to reckon with. But I think ultimately they will find a way to get something done. With Cousins, I'm a lot less certain because it's been made clear to Cousins people that they're not going to go down the road they did twice already, which is the fully guaranteed road. And so I think he's going to have value in the market. I think Kevin O'Connell and Kwesi want to bring him back, and that's the idea, is to bring him back. How far are they willing to go financially to do it? And if they aren't willing to meet his number, is somebody else going to meet his number? And I think Kirk's a really good quarterback. I think Kirk is by far the best option out there for teams in the market. And I think for someone, maybe this is Atlanta, maybe this is Vegas, it's the teams we've talked about that have openings, can he be Alex Smith in Kansas City for you? You know what I mean? If you got a new head coach, can he be the guy who can get you up to a competitive level right away and then buy you time to find the next guy? I think he can be. Again, pending what you think of his Achilles injury and the medicals and all of that, like, I think he very much can be. So I think that's the model somebody would be looking for with Kirk Cousins, is what Alex Smith was for Andy Reid in Kansas City. And because of that, I sort of feel like somebody is going to go the extra mile to get him. And then maybe a month from now, we're talking about Minnesota trying to trade up to get a quarterback in the draft.
Brother, you're the best. Appreciate it.
And thanks for the workshop. I appreciate it. Thank all you guys for that.
You got to know that. Listen, we're here for you, Albert. We're here. There may be an I in Rich and Eisen, but I'm a team player. Listen, you know, as shocked as I was to read it, and then melancholy as I was to open up Peter King's retirement column, I was thrilled to see him suggest you and the MMQB first up as a suggestion for people to go to when he's no longer writing his Football Morning in America. He mentioned you and your column that you took the mantle from him and ran with. He mentioned you, and I was thrilled to see that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'd be remiss if I didn't say what an incredible person he is and what an incredible legacy he leaves. And you know him well too, Rich.
Yep.
You know, it's so cliche to say, as good as this person was, as good as the guy was at his job, he was even better as a person. But it really applies. I mean, have you ever seen anything so unanimous on social media as what we saw yesterday?
Nope. And he deserved it.
Unanimous, and he deserved every word of it. And I'm so grateful for what he did for me. If anybody wants to read about that, like I did a story on him yesterday after the announcement. But congrats, Peter. I hope you get to kick your feet up and go to bed at 9:30 and not worry about having to stay up at 3 a.m. in Indianapolis anymore. You earned every bit of that. I love Peter, and I owe him a lot, as do a lot of people in our business.
Me too. Plus one. Thanks, Albert. See you in Indy.
All right. Thanks, Rich.
You bet. That's Albert Breer here. Just want to say something about Peter as well, Peter King. When I saw my name as an NFL Network host in his column for the first time, I got a huge lift. Huge. When he once wrote about how much he enjoyed the NFL Network's draft coverage and then threw my name in there, I had an immense sense of pride and accomplishment, because he was the one saying it. When Peter King gave you a shout out in his column, and it's shocking me that I'm now saying in the past tense because he's retiring, it was the ultimate honor for anybody in NFL media, because his column on Monday was must read, and he would write his head off. Before I started the podcast that this show was born out of, the first thing I did outside of hosting was write a column for NFL.com, because he inspired me to do that. And I started trying to write a column each week. And I thought, I wrote columns in school at the school newspaper. And then I was a newspaper person outside at the Staten Island Advance. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I thought I could do it. And then I try to do it, and then I would write it, and then I would just be wiped out writing it, and it would be one-tenth as long, but length doesn't matter. It matters the quality of the writing. It was one, I don't even know what the percentage was of what Peter was delivering to his readers. And the thing that was also great about Peter is how giving he is to everybody in the industry, giving of compliments, giving of time, giving of 2 cents. So generous, and giving to fans. He's the guy who was like, let's have a beer in certain towns. He would have meetups with his fans. He was first one I recall doing that. Giving of his fans, giving of his side, giving of himself. So the fact that he's now saying, I got to take time for me. You take all the time you need, Peter. And you've got a spot here all the time. I love that, man. Well done, Peter King, to say the least. What an incredible run. I wanted to say this yesterday, but the lights literally went out here. So it took me a day to get around to it. And I think we all feel the same way about Peter. Susie does too. Man. Susie had him on What the Football. I think she's having him on Thursday's show when she's sitting in this seat. Love, Peter King. Congratulations. What a run. Back with more on the Rich Eisen Show in a moment.
Hi there. Sorry for the interruption, but are you enjoying this show on Google Podcasts? You should know that the Google Podcasts app is going away this spring. That's right, going away, gone as in no longer available. You can still enjoy this show elsewhere, though. Try out Spotify or Amazon Music, or maybe TuneIn is more your style. Whatever app you switch to, be sure to follow so you never miss the next episode. And thanks for listening, wherever you listen.
I also love the story that you've told, and if you wouldn't mind telling the audience here as well, at the Combine, when you would be pulled into rooms and you didn't know which room you were being pulled into by which.
Yeah. I was, you know, it had come back in that day, everybody was reaching for it. Agents was in the hotel. Yeah. Everybody was everybody.
It was all scheduled.
It was scheduled, structured. You can't be in a hotel. You can't be on the premises. Then it was everything. It was wild. So I'm backing away from crowds and people trying to grab me. And I backed into this room and the Giants was there. And it was the Giants room, and they had people sitting down taking these tests. What do they call these things?
Oh, yeah, like the psychology test, right?
I mean, the thing was that thick, man. And I sat down, and they gave me this thing. And what is this? They say, it's this test, and, you know, we need you to take it. I said, oh, what picker do you have? It's like the 10th. I said, oh, I'd be gone for then. I got to be walked out. I'd be gone. I'd be way gone for then.
And then let's just get into it here. I mean, Belichick said he watched you run the 40 at the combine and that you ran it and then ran into the tunnel. And is it true?
That's not true.
Okay. You did not run into a waiting car and being taken to the airport right then and there.
No, because I had more interviews and all of that. No. That story just grows and grows.
It does. It's like a fish story.
It is. That's not true. I did everything that I was asked to do. Now, I didn't lift. I ain't do none of that because Jerry Rice to this day hadn't laid across my arms and let me bench press him. You know, I don't know where that comes from.
I love that you say that. When you're watching the defensive backs
put up the
weight and reps of 225 and struggling to get a fifth one up,
you're like, have you ever said, man, well, if that guy would have got one more rep, he'd have been there on that play? Never. Or the three cone drill. Like, no, this has nothing to do with nothing. So I didn't do any of that stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it all worked out.
Yeah.
Did I see you with your blenders on earlier today? Back here on the Rich Eisen Show. You're wearing your prime blenders, right?
Why wouldn't I?
Back on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Let's go to the phone lines. Corey in Milwaukee has been hanging out. What's up, Corey?
Hey, what's up, Rich? How are you?
I'm fine. Nice set of pipes, Corey.
So I got a question. I want your thoughts on this. I like Caleb. I believe the Bears like Caleb. But I think the Bears have an opportunity to do something genius here.
And that is?
They can trade back that number one pick, draft Marvin Harrison, take the draft capital haul, trade Fields, take that draft capital, stay at 9, take the local kid McCarthy, and go sign Austin Ekeler to a cheap deal. And I think you're contending in the NFC North.
Corey, next season. In Milwaukee. Now then, let's walk through
Corey,
this.
Do
here.
You win all your fantasy leagues?
So you trade one down. Hold on a second. You trade one down to where and get so you trade one down to where and get Marvin?
I would trade it to Washington. They seem to be
okay.
very high on their local kid, Caleb.
So okay, so then you trade down to one. So then you take that draft capital. But you'd have to trade Justin Fields first. You got to trade him now. Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, but that doesn't preclude you then from trading out again, getting a draft haul, and then you've got a, I'd imagine you'd have so many draft picks, you can move up to get J.J. McCarthy from 9, you know, easily.
Or move back to 3 and get May or Daniels.
But you don't want to do that. You want Marvin. He's saying get the receiver with DJ Moore, get the young kids, and then get the kid from Illinois and J.J. McCarthy.
No, I'm saying you trade to 2, take Marvin Harrison, then trade back to 3 with the picks you just got from Washington.
With the 9?
Yeah, take 9 and some future picks.
Hold on, let's ask Corey.
3. Corey? Sorry, Corey.
Yeah, I think you move back 1 and you take Harrison at number 2. And you feel fine with McCarthy at 9. I don't, unless Denver moves up to try to get him, I would stick with at.
But you'd
McCarthy
have enough picks to get him when if that's the guy you wanted and targeted, you have enough picks to make sure you get him. Absolutely. All right, Corey, thanks for the call. Well, how about that one?
I was saying do what the Texans did last year. So you're picking 2 and 3.
Yeah. Raheem Morris, the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, is coming up. Usually when a fan, no disrespect, hold on a minute. Let me say that again.
Sorry.
No disrespect.
Right.
But usually when a fan will come to the show, I got this trade idea. And you're like, okay. That one actually stopped me in my tracks because that one would just reset because you'd have to – you're trading Justin Fields first. Ryan Pohl said that
right.
Because, number one, it's wrong to the kid. Just let him sit all the way through to the end of April. Two, it's wrong for you because everybody's going to fill their roster spots at quarterback if they have a need. Second week of March, free agency hits. It's on. So you need to get you need to offload your guy then. So then you're thinking it's going to be Caleb. It's going to be Caleb. It's going to be Caleb. And then it's not. Washington moves up to take Caleb Williams. You go down to 2. You get Marvin Harrison Jr. And then you've got picks up the yin-yang to go surround your guy. Who is less than, he's like quarterback 4, but he's also a local kid who a lot of fans there kind of know from his Big Ten play. And if you loved Harbaugh, you get his spirit animal version.
True.
Okay. What do Bears fans think of that?
Bears
let's
fans.
Hear from you.
React to me.
Stephen Jones chiming in on what Dad meant about saying all in. That's hour 3, too. Oh, yeah. News popping.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
And here's Lil Yachty with Tierra Whack.
I've never been to a fashion show. I never did any Paris Fashion Week, New York Fashion Week, and I'll tell you why. Because I would always go to events, and people would say to me, "Oh man, Yachty, man, I love your music, bro." And she'd be like, "What song?" At the time, I didn't love my music. I would feel like I'm in a room with all these artists, and they all respect each other, and I feel like no one respects me.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.